He was plenty happy using me as a battery.
Prof looked troubled. He continued on his way, and Edmund looked to me, his eyebrows raised.
What was that about?
I don't know, I said, equally confused.
Well, anyway, continuing my story. Bastion didn't like that I couldn't gift him, so he sold me to a fellow named Insulation. I always thought that was a stupid, epic name.
Not as bad as the El Brass Bullish dude, I said.
You're kidding. There's really an epic named that?
I nodded. From inner LA. He's dead now, but you'd be surprised at the stupid names a lot of them come up with. Incredible cosmic powers do not equate with high IQ, or even a sense of what is dramatically appropriate. Remind me to tell you about the pink pinkness sometime.
That name doesn't sound so bad, Edmund said, grinning. It's actually a little self-aware. Has a smile to it. I'd like to meet an epic who likes to smile.
I'm talking to one, I thought. I still hadn't quite accepted that. Well, I said, she didn't smile for long. She thought the name was clever, and then...
What?
Try saying it a few times really quickly, I suggested. He moved his mouth, then a huge grin split his mouth.
Well, well, well.
I shook my head in wonder as I continued eating my jerky. What to make of Edmund? He wasn't the hero people like Abraham and my father were looking for, not by a long shot. Edmund paled when we talked of fighting Steelheart. He was so timid. He often asked for permission to speak before voicing an opinion. No, he wasn't some heroic epic born to fight for the rights of men, but he was nearly as important. I'd never met, read of, or even caught a story of an epic who so blatantly broke the stereotype. Edmund had no arrogance, no hatred, no dismissiveness. It was baffling. Part of me kept thinking, this is what we get? I finally find an epic who doesn't want to kill or enslave me, and it's an old, soft-spoken Indian man who likes to put sugar in his milk?
You lost someone, didn't you? Edmund asked.
I looked up sharply.
What makes you ask? Reactions like that one, actually. And the fact that everyone in your team seems to be walking on crumpled tinfoil and trying not to make any sound.
Sparks. Good metaphor. Walking on crumpled tinfoil. I'd have to remember that one.
Who was she? Edmund asked.
Who said it was a she?
The look on your face, son, Edmund said, then smiled.
I didn't respond. Though that was in part because I was trying to banish the flood of memories washing through my mind. Megan glaring at me. Megan smiling. Megan laughing just a few hours before she died. Idiot. You only knew her for a couple of weeks.
I killed my wife, Edmund said absently, leaning back, staring at the ceiling. It was an accident. Electrified the counter while trying to power the microwave. Stupid thing, eh? I wanted a frozen burrito. Sarah died for that.
He tapped the table.
I hope yours died for something greater.
That will depend, I thought, on what we do next.
I left Edmund at the table and nodded to Cody, who was standing by the wall and doing a very good job of pretending he wasn't playing guard. I wandered into the other room, where Prof, Tia, and Abraham were sitting around Tia's data pad. I almost went looking for Megan, my instinct saying she'd be standing guard outside the hideout, since all of the others were in here.
Idiot.
I joined the team, looking over Tia's shoulder at the screen of the enlarged mobile data pad. She was running it from one of the fuel cells we'd stolen from the power station. Once Edmund had withdrawn his abilities, the city power had gone out, including those wires that sometimes ran through the steel catacombs. Her pad showed an old steel apartment complex.
No good,
Prof said, pointing to some numbers at the side of the screen.
The building next to it is still populated. I'm not going to have a showdown with a high epic when there are bystanders so close.
What about in front of his palace?
Abraham asked.
You won't expect that.
I doubt he's expecting anything in particular, Tia said. Besides, Cody's done some scouting. The looting has started, so Steelheart has pulled enforcement in close to his palace. He's really only got infantry left, but that's enough. We'll never get in to make any preparations, and we're going to need to prepare the area if we're going to face him.
Soldier Field, I said softly. They turned to me. Look, I said, reaching over and scrolling along Tia's map of the city. It felt downright primitive compared to the real-time camera views we'd been using. I got the screen to an old portion of the city that was mostly abandoned. The old football stadium, I said. Nobody lives nearby, and there's nothing in the area to loot, so nobody will be around. We can use the tensors to tunnel in from a nearby point in the understreets. That will let us make preparations quietly, without worry that we're being spied on.
It's so open, Prof said, rubbing his chin. I'd rather face him in an old building, where we can confuse him and hit him from a lot of sides.
That will still work here, I said. He'll almost certainly fly down into the middle of the field. We could put a sniper in the upper seats and could carve ourselves a few unexpected tunnels with rope lines down through the seats into the stadium's innards. We could baffle Steelheart and his minions by putting tunnels where they aren't expected, and the terrain will be unfamiliar to his people. Far more so than a simple apartment complex. Prof nodded slowly.
We still haven't addressed the real question, Tia said. We're all thinking it. We might as well talk about it.
Steelheart's weakness, Abraham said softly.
We're too effective for our own good, Tia said. We've got him positioned, and we can bring him out to fight us. We can ambush him perfectly. But will that even matter?
So it comes to this, Prof said. Listen well, people. These are the stakes. We could pull out now. It would be a disaster. Everyone would find out we'd tried to kill him and failed. That could do as much harm as killing him would do good. People would think that the Epics really are invincible, that even we can't face someone like Steelheart. Beyond that, Steelheart would take it upon himself to personally hunt us down. He is not the type to give up easily. Wherever we go, we'd always have to watch and worry about him. But we could go. We don't know his weakness, not for certain. It might be best to pull out while we can.
And if we don't? Cody asked.
We continue with the plan, Prof said. We do everything we can to kill him, try out every possible clue from David's memory. We set up a trap in this stadium that combines all of those possibilities, and we take a chance. It will be the most uncertain hit I've ever been part of. One of those things could work, but more likely, none of them will. And we will have entered into a fight with one of the most powerful epics in the world. He'll probably kill us.
Everyone sat in silence. No, it couldn't end here, could it?
I want to try, Cody said. David's right. He's been right all along, sneaking about, killing little epics. That's not changing the world. We've got a chance at Steelheart. We have to at least try.
I felt a flood of relief. Abraham nodded.
Better to die here, with a chance at defeating this creature, than to run.
Tia and Prof shared a look.
You want to do it too, don't you, John? Tia asked.
Either we fight him here, or the Reckoners are finished, Prof said. We'd spend the rest of our lives running. Besides, I doubt I could live with myself if I ran. After all we've been through.
I nodded. We do have to at least try. For Megan's sake.
I'll bet she would find that ironic, Abraham noted.
We looked at him, and he shrugged.
She was the one who didn't want to do this job. I don't know what she'd think of us dedicating the end of it to her memory.
You can be a downer, Abe, Prof said.
The truth is not a downer,
Abraham said in his lightly accented voice.
The lies that you pretend to accept are the true downer. Says the man who still believes the epics will save us, Prof said.
Gentlemen, Tia cut in. Enough. I think we're all in agreement. We're going to try this, ridiculous though it is. We'll try to kill Steelheart without any real idea what his weakness is. One by one, we all nodded. We had to try. I'm not doing this for Megan, I finally said. But I'm doing it, in part, because of her. If we have to stand up and die so that people will know that someone still fights, so be it. Prof, you said that you worry our failure will depress people. I don't see that. They'll hear our story and realize that there's an option other than doing what the epics command. We may not be the ones to kill Steelheart, but even if we fail, we might be the cause of his death. Someday.
Don't be so sure we'll fail, Prof said. If I thought this was suicide for certain, I wouldn't let us continue. As I said, I don't intend to pin our hopes of killing him on a single guess. We'll try everything. Tia, what do your instincts say will work?
Something from the bank vault, she said. One of those items is special. I just wish I knew which one.
Did you bring them with you when we abandoned the old hideout?
I brought the most unusual ones, she said. I stowed the rest in the pocket we made outside. We can fetch them. So far as I know, enforcement hasn't found them.
We take everything and spread it all out here,
Prof said, pointing at the steel floor of the stadium, which had once been soil.
David's right. That's where Steelheart will probably land. We don't have to know specifically what weakened him. We can just haul it all over and use it.
Abraham nodded.
A good plan.
What do you think it is?
Prof asked him.
If I had to guess, I would say it was David's father's gun or the bullets it shot. Every gun is slightly distinctive in its own way. Perhaps it was the precise composition of the metal.
That's easy enough to test, I said. I'll bring the gun, and when I get a chance, I'll shoot him. I don't think it will work, but I'm willing to try.
Good,
Prof said.
And you, Prof?
Tia asked.
I think it was because David's father was one of the faithful,
Prof said softly. He didn't look at Abraham.
Fools though they are, they're earnest fools. People like Abraham see the world differently than the rest of us do. So maybe it was the way David's father viewed the epics that let him hurt Steelheart.
I sat back, thinking it over.
Well, it shouldn't be too hard for me to shoot him too, Abraham said. In fact, we should probably all try it, and anything else we can think of.
They looked at me. I still think it's crossfire, I said. I think Steelheart can only be harmed by someone who isn't intending to hurt him.
That's tougher to arrange, Tia said. If you're right, it probably won't activate if any of us hit him, since we actually want him dead.
Agreed,
Prof said.
But it's a good theory. We'd need to find a way to get his own soldiers to hit him by accident.
He'd have to bring the soldiers first, Tia said. Now that he's convinced there's a rival epic in town, he might just bring Nightwielder and Firefight. No, I said. He'll come with soldiers. Limelight has been using minions, and Steelheart will want to be ready. He'll want to have his own soldiers to deal with distractions like that. Besides, while he'll want to face Limelight himself, he'll also want witnesses.
I agree,
Prof said.
His soldiers will probably have orders not to engage unless fired upon. We can make certain they feel they need to start fighting back.
Then we'll need to be able to stall Steelheart long enough to set up a good crossfire,
Abraham said. He paused.
Actually, we'll need to stall him during the crossfire. If he assumes this is just an ambush of soldiers, he'll fly off and let enforcement deal with it.
Abraham looked at Prof.
Limelight will have to make an appearance,
Prof nodded.
I know.
John?
Tia said, touching his arm.
It's what must be done, he said. We'll need a way to deal with Nightwielder and Firefight, too.
I'm telling you, I said. Firefight won't be an issue. He's...
I know he's not what he seems, son, Prof said. I accept that. But have you ever fought an illusionist?
Sure, I said. With Cody and Megan.
That was a weak one, Prof said. But I suppose it gives you an idea what to expect. Firefight will be stronger, much stronger. I almost wish he was just another fire epic.
Tia nodded.
He should be a priority. We'll need code phrases in case he sends in illusory versions of the other members of the team to confuse us. And we'll have to watch for false walls, fake members of enforcement intended to confuse, things like that.
Do you think Nightwielder will even show? Abraham asked. From what I heard, David's little flashlight show sent him running like a rabbit before the hawk.
Prof turned to me and Tia. I shrugged.
He might not, I said. Tia nodded. Nightwielder's a hard one to read.
We should be ready for him anyway, I said. But I'll be perfectly fine if he stays away.
Abraham, Prof said. You think you can rig up a UV floodlight or two using the extra power cells? We should arm everyone with some of those flashlights as well.
We fell silent, and I had a feeling we were all thinking the same thing. The Reckoners liked extremely well-planned operations, executed only after weeks or months of preparation. Yet here we were, going to try to take down one of the strongest epics in the world with little more than some trinkets and flashlights. It was what we had to do.
I think, Tia said, we should come up with a good plan for extraction in case none of these things work.
Prof didn't look like he agreed. His expression had grown grim. He knew that if none of these ideas let us kill Steelheart, our chances of survival were slim.
A copter will work best, Abraham said. Without conflux, enforcement is grounded. If we can use a power cell, or even make him power a copter for us.
That will be good, Tia said. But we'll still have to disengage.
Well, we've still got Diamond in custody,
Abraham said.
We could grab some of his explosives.
Wait, I said, confused. In custody?
I had Abraham and Cody grab him the evening of your little encounter, Prof said absently. Couldn't risk letting him say what he knew.
But you said he'd never...
He saw a hole made by the tensors,
Prof said.
And you were linked to him in Nightwielder's mind. The moment they saw you at one of our operations, they'd grab Diamond. It was for his safety as much as our own.
So, what are you doing with him?
Feeding him a lot,
Prof said,
and bribing him to lie low. He was pretty unsettled by that run-in, and I think he was happy we took him.
Prof hesitated.
I promised him a look at how the tensors work in exchange for him remaining in one of our bolt holes until this all blows over.
I sat back against the wall of the room, disturbed. Prof hadn't said it, but I could read the truth from his tone. The emergence of knowledge of the tensors would change the way the Reckoners worked. Even if we beat Steelheart, they had lost something great. No longer would they be able to sneak into places unexpectedly. Their enemies would be able to plan, watch, prepare. I'd brought about the end of an era. They didn't seem to blame me, but I couldn't help feeling some guilt. I was like the guy who had brought the spoiled shrimp cocktail to the party, causing everyone to throw up for a week straight.
Anyway,
Abraham said, tapping the screen of Tia's datapad.
We could dig out a section under the field here with the tensors, leave an inch or so of steel, then pack the hole with explosives. If we have to punch out, we blow the thing, maybe take out some soldiers and use the confusion and smoke to cover our escape. Assuming Steelheart doesn't just chase us down and shoot the copter out of the sky,
Prof said. We fell silent.
I believe you said I was a downer?
Abraham asked.
Sorry,
Prof replied.
Just pretend I said something self-righteous about truth instead.
Abraham smiled.
It's a workable plan,
Prof said.
Though he might want to try to set up some kind of decoy explosion, maybe back at his palace, to draw him off. Abraham, I'll let you handle that. Tia, can you send a message to Steelheart through these networks without being traced?
I should be able to, she replied.
Well, give him a response from Limelight. Tell him, be ready on the night of the third day. You'll know the place when the time comes.
She nodded.
3 days? Abraham said. Not much time. We really don't have much we need to prepare,
Prof said.
Besides, anything longer would be too suspicious. He probably expects us to face him tonight. This will have to do, though.
The Reckoners nodded, and the preparations for our last fight began. I sat back, my anxiety rising. I was finally going to have my chance to face him. Killing him with this plan seemed almost as much a long shot as ever. But I would finally get my chance. 34. The vibrations shook me to the soul. It seemed that my soul vibrated back. I breathed in, shaping the sound with a thought, then thrust my hand forward and sent the music outward. Music only I could hear. Music only I could control. I opened my eyes. A portion of the tunnel in front of me collapsed into fine powdery dust. I wore a mask, though Prof continued to assure me the stuff wasn't as bad to breathe as I thought. I wore my mobile strapped to my forehead, shining brightly. The small tunnel through the steel was cramped, but I was alone, so I was able to move as much as I needed to. As always, using the tensor reminded me of Megan and that day when we'd infiltrated the power station. It reminded me of the elevator shaft, where she'd shared with me things it seemed she hadn't shared with many. I'd asked Abraham if he'd known she was from Portland, and he'd seemed surprised. He said she never spoke about her past. I scooped the steel dust into a bucket, then hauled it down the tunnel and dumped it. I did that a few more times, then got back to digging with the tensor. The others were hauling the dust the rest of the way out. I added a few feet to the tunnel, then checked my mobile to see how I was doing. Abraham had set up 3 others above to create a kind of triangulation system that let me cut this tunnel with precision. I needed to go a bit more to the right. Then I needed to angle upward. Next time I pick a location to ambush a high epic, I thought, I'm going to choose one that's closer to established understreet tunnels. The rest of the team agreed with Abraham that they should wire the field with explosives from below, and they also wanted a few hidden tunnels leading up to the perimeter. I was pretty sure we'd be happy to have those when we faced Steelheart, but building all of it was getting very tiring. I almost regretted that I'd shown so much talent with the tensor. Almost. It was still pretty awesome to be able to dig through solid steel with just my hands. I couldn't hack like Tia, scout as well as Cody, or fix machinery like Abraham. This way, at least, I had a place in the team. Of course, I thought as I vaporized another section of the wall, Prof's ability makes mine look like a piece of rice, and not even a cooked one. I was basically only useful in this role because he refused to take it. That dampened my satisfaction. A thought occurred to me. I raised my hand, summoning the tensor's vibrations. How had Prof done it to make that sword? He'd pounded the wall, hadn't he? I tried to mimic the motion, pounding my fist against the side of the tunnel and directing the burst of energy in my mind from the tensor. I didn't get a sword. I caused several handfuls of dust to stream out of a pocket in the wall, followed by a long lump of steel that looked vaguely like a bulbous carrot. Well, it's a start, I guess. I reached down to pick up the carrot, but caught sight of a light moving up the small tunnel.
I quickly kicked the carrot into the pile of dust, then got back to work. Prof soon moved up behind me.
How's it going?
Another couple of feet, I said. Then I can carve out the pocket for the explosives.
Good,
Prof said.
Try to make it long and thin. We want to channel the explosion upward, not back down the tunnel here.
I nodded. The plan was to weaken the roof of the pocket, which would lie just below the center of Soldier Field. Then we'd seal the explosives in with some careful welding by Cody, directing the blast the direction we wanted it to go.
You keep at it,
Prof said.
For now, I'll take care of carting off the dust for you.
I nodded, grateful for the chance to just spend more time with the tensor. It was Cody's. He'd given it up for me, as mine was still a ripped, zombie, droopy-eyed mess. I hadn't asked Prof about the two he carried. It didn't seem prudent. We worked in silence for a time, me carving out chunks of steel, Prof carting off the dust. He found my carrot sword and gave me an odd look. I hoped he didn't see me blush in the faint light. Eventually, my mobile beeped, telling me I was nearing the right depth. I carefully crafted a long hole at shoulder level. Then, I reached in and began creating a small room to stuff the explosives into. Prof walked back, carrying his bucket, and saw what I'd done. He checked his mobile, looking up at the ceiling, then rapped softly at the metal with a small hammer. He nodded to himself, though I couldn't tell any difference in the way it sounded. You know, I said, I'm pretty sure these tensors defy the laws of physics.
What? You mean destroying solid metal with your fingers isn't normal?
More than that, I said. I think we get less dust than we should. It always seems to settle down and take up less space than the steel did. But it couldn't do that unless it was denser than the steel, which it can't possibly be. Prof grunted, filling another bucket. Nothing about the epics makes sense, I said, pulling a few armfuls of dust out of the hole I was making. Not even their powers, I hesitated. Particularly not their powers.
True enough,
Prof said. He continued filling his buckets.
I owe you an apology, son, for how I acted.
Tia explained it, I said quickly. She said you've got some things in your past, some history with the tensors. It makes sense. It's okay.
No, it's not. But it is what happens when I use the tensors. Well, it's like Tia said, things in my past. I'm sorry for how I acted. There was no justification for it, especially considering what you'd just been through.
It wasn't so bad, I said. What you did, I mean. The rest was horrible. I tried not to think about that long march with a dying girl in my arms, a dying girl I didn't save. I pushed forward. You were amazing, Prof. You shouldn't just use the tensors when we face Steelheart. You should use them all the time. Think of what—
Stop!
I froze. The tone of his voice sent a spike of shock down my spine. Prof breathed in and out deeply, his hands buried in steel dust. He closed his eyes.
Don't speak like that, son. It doesn't do me any good. Please.
All right, I said carefully.
Just accept my apology, if you are willing.
Of course. Prof nodded, turning back to his work. Can I ask you something? I said. I won't mention, you know, not directly at least.
Go ahead then.
Well, you invented these things, amazing things. The harm sway, the jackets. From what Abraham tells me, you had these devices when you founded the Reckoners.
I did.
So, why not make us something else? Another kind of weapon, based off the epics. I mean, you sell knowledge to people like Diamond, and he sells it to scientists who are working to create technology like this. I figure you've got to be as good at it as any of them are. Why sell the knowledge and not use it yourself? Prof worked in silence for a few minutes, then walked over to help me pull dust out of the hole I was making.
That's a good question. Have you asked Abraham or Cody?
I grimaced. Cody talks about demons or fairies, which he claims the Irish totally stole from his ancestors. I can't tell if he's serious.
He's not,
Prof said.
He just likes to see how people react when he says things like that.
Abraham thinks it's because you don't have a lab now, like you used to. Without the right equipment, you can't design new technology.
Abraham is a very thoughtful man. What do you think?
I think that if you can find the resources to buy or steal explosives, cycles, and even copters when you need them, you could get yourself a lab. There's got to be another reason. Prof dusted off his hands and turned to look at me.
All right. I can see where this is going. You may ask one question about my past.
He said it as if it were a gift, a kind of penance. He had treated me poorly, in part because of something in his past. The recompense he gave was a piece of that past. I found myself completely unprepared. What did I want to know? Did I ask how he'd come up with the tensors? Did I ask what it was that made him not want to use them? He seemed to be bracing himself. I don't want to drag him through that, I thought. Not if it affects him so profoundly. I wouldn't want to do that any more than I would have wanted someone to drag me through memories of what had happened to Megan. I decided to pick something more benign. What were you? I asked. Before Calamity. What was your job? Prof seemed taken aback.
That's your question?
Yes.
You're sure you want to know?
I nodded.
I was a fifth grade science teacher,
Prof said. I opened my mouth to laugh at the joke, but the tone of his voice made me hesitate. Really? I finally asked.
Really? An epic destroyed the school. It was still in session.
He stared at the wall, emotion bleeding from his face. He was putting a mask up. And here I thought it had been an innocent question. But the tensors, I said, the harm sway. You worked at a lab at some point, right?
No,
he said.
The tensors and the harm sway don't belong to me. The others just assume I invented them. I didn't.
That revelation stunned me. Prof turned away to gather up his buckets.
The kids at this school called me Prof, too. It always sticks, though I'm not a professor. I didn't even go to graduate school. I only ended up teaching science by accident. It was the teaching itself that I loved. At least, I loved it back when I thought it would be enough to change things.
He walked off down the tunnel, leaving me to wonder.
That's it. Y'all can turn around now.
I turned, adjusting the pack I was toting on my back. Cody, balanced on a ladder above me, lifted the welding mask from his face and wiped his brow with the hand not holding the torch. It was a few hours after I had carved out the pocket under the field. Cody and I had spent those hours carving smaller tunnels and holes throughout the stadium, with Cody spot welding where support was needed. Our most recent project was making the sniper's nest that would be my post at the beginning of the battle. It was at the front of the third level of seats on the west side of the stadium, at about the 50-yard line overhanging the top of the first deck. We didn't want it to be visible from above, so I used the tensor to carve away a space under the floor, leaving only an inch of metal on top, except for 2 feet right near the front for my head and shoulders to poke out so I could aim a rifle through a hole in the lower wall at the front of the deck. Cody reached up from his perch on the ladder and jiggled the metal framework he had just welded to the bottom of the area I had hollowed out. He nodded, apparently satisfied it would support me when I lay in wait there in the sniper's nest. The floor of that section of seating was too thin to hollow out a hole deep enough to hide in. The framework was our solution to that problem. Where to next? I asked as Cody climbed down the ladder. How about we do that escape hole farther up in the third deck? Cody slung his welding gear over his shoulder and cracked some kinks out of his back.
Abraham called to say he's going to take care of the UV floodlights now, he said. He finished packing the explosives under the field a while ago, so it's time for me to go weld down there. Y'all can handle the next hole on your own. But I'll help you carry the ladder there. Good job on these holes so far, lad.
So you're back to lad? I asked. What happened to mate?
I realized something,
Cody said, collapsing the ladder and tilting the top to one side.
My Australian ancestors?
Yeah? I lifted the lower end of the ladder and followed him as he walked from the first deck of seats into the stadium innards.
They came from Scotland originally. So if I want to be really authentic, I need to be able to speak Australian with a Scottish accent.
We kept walking through the pitch-black space beneath the stands that was kind of like a large curved hallway. I think it was called a concourse. The planned lower end for the next escape hole was in one of the restrooms down the hall. An Australian Scottish Tennessean accent, eh? I said. You practicing it?
Hell no, Cody said. I'm not crazy, lad. Just a little eccentric.
I smiled, then turned my head to look in the direction of the field. We're really going to try this, aren't we?
We'd better. I bet Abraham $20 that we'd win.
It's hard to believe. I've spent 10 years planning for this day, Cody. Over half my life. Now it's here. It's nothing like what I'd pictured, but it's here.
You should feel proud, Cody said. The Reckoners have been doing what they've been doing for over half a decade. No changes, no real surprises, no big risks.
He reached up to scratch his left ear.
I often wondered if we were getting stagnant. Never could gather the arguments to suggest a change. It took someone coming in from the outside to shake us up a wee bit.
Attacking Steelheart is just a wee bit of a shake-up?
Well, it's not like you've gotten us to do something really crazy, like trying to steal Tia's cola.
Outside the restroom, we set the ladder down and Cody wandered over to check on some explosives on the opposite wall. We intended to use them as distractions. Abraham was going to blow them when needed. I paused and pulled out one of my eraser-like blasting caps. Maybe I should put one of these on them, I said, in case we need a secondary person to blow the explosives. Cody eyed it, rubbing his chin. He knew what I meant. We'd only need a secondary person to blow the explosives if Abraham fell. I didn't like thinking about it, but after Megan, well, we all seemed a whole lot more frail to me now than we once had.
You know, Cody said, taking the blasting cap from me, where I'd really like to have a backup is on the explosives under the field there. Those are the most important ones to detonate. They're going to cover our escape.
I suppose, I said.
Do you mind if I take this and stick it down there before I weld it closed?
Cody asked. No, assuming Prof agrees.
He likes redundancy,
Cody said, slipping the blasting cap into his pocket.
Just keep that pin dealy of yours handy, and don't push it by accident.
He sauntered back toward the tunnel under the field, and I took the ladder into the restroom to get to work. I punched my fist out into open air, then ducked as the steel dust fell around me. So that's how he did it, I thought, flexing my fingers. I hadn't figured out the sword trick, but I was getting good at punching and vaporizing things in front of my fist. It had to do with crafting the tensor's sound waves so that they followed my hand in motion, creating kind of an envelope around it. Done right, the wave would course along with my fist, kind of like smoke might follow your hand if you punch through it. I smiled, shaking my hand. I'd finally figured it out. Good thing, too. My knuckles were feeling pretty sore. I finished off the hole with a more mundane tensor blast, reaching up from the top of my ladder to sculpt the hole. Through it, I could see a pure black sky. Someday I'd like to see the sun again, I thought. The only thing up there was blackness. Blackness and calamity.
burning in the distance directly above, like a terrible red eye. I climbed up off the ladder and out into the upper third deck. I had a sudden, surreal flash of memory. This was near where I'd sat the one time I'd come to this stadium. My father had scrimped and saved to buy us the tickets. I couldn't remember which team we'd played, but I could remember the taste of the hot dog my father bought, and his cheering, his excitement. I crouched down among the seats, keeping low just in case. Steelheart's spy drones were probably out of commission now that the city was without power, but he might have people scouting the city and looking for limelight. It would be wise to remain out of sight as much as possible. Fishing a rope out of my pack, I tied it around the leg of one of the steel seats, then sneaked back to the hole and down the ladder, returning to the bathroom below the second deck. Leaving the rope hanging for a quicker escape than the ladder would allow, I stowed the ladder and my empty pack in one of the stalls and walked out toward the seats. Abraham was waiting there for me, leaning against the entryway to the lower seating with his muscled arms crossed, his expression thoughtful. "So, I take it the UV lights are hooked up?" I asked. Abraham nodded.
"It would have been beautiful to use the stadium's own floodlights."
I laughed. I'd have liked to see that, making a bunch of lights work that had their bulbs turned to steel and fused to their sockets. The two of us stood there for a time, looking out at our battlefield. I checked my mobile. It was early morning. We planned to summon Steelheart at 5 a.m. Hopefully his soldiers would be exhausted from preventing lootings all night without any vehicles or power armor. The Reckoners usually worked on a night schedule anyway. 15 minutes until projected go time, I noted. Did Cody finish the welding? Prof and Tia back yet?
Cody completed the weld and is moving to his position,
Abraham said.
Prof will arrive momentarily. They were able to procure a copter, and Edmund has gifted Tia the ability to power it. She flew it outside of town to park it, so as to not give away our location.
If things went sour, she'd time her flight back in so that she could sweep down and pick us up as the explosives went off. We'd also blast a smokescreen from the stands to cover our escape. I agreed with Prof, though. You couldn't outfly or outgun Steelheart in a copter. This was the showdown. We defeated him here, or we died. My mobile flashed, and a voice spoke into my ear.
I'm back, Prof said. Tia's set too.
He hesitated a moment.
Let's do this.
35. Since my post was right up against the front of the third deck, if I'd been standing, I could have looked down over the edge toward the lowest level of seats. Huddled in my improvised hole, however, I couldn't see those, though I had a good view of the field. This put me high enough to watch what was going on around the stadium. But I also had a route to ground if I needed to try firing my father's gun at Steelheart. The tunnel and rope farther up the deck would get me there quickly. I'd drop down, then try to sneak up on him, if it came to that. It would be like trying to sneak up on a lion while armed only with a squirt gun. I huddled in my spot, waiting. I wore my tensor on my left hand, my right hand holding the grip of the pistol. Cody had given me a replacement rifle, but for now it lay beside me. Overhead, fireworks flared in the air. 4 posts around the top of the stadium released enormous jets of sparks. I don't know where Abraham had found fireworks that were pure green, but the signal would undoubtedly be seen and recognized. This was the moment. Would he really come? The fireworks began to die down.
I've got something,
Abraham said in our ears, his light French accent subtly emphasizing the wrong syllables. He had the high point sniping position, and Cody had the low point sniping position. Cody was the better shot, but Abraham needed to be farther away, where he could be outside the fight. His job was to remotely turn on the floodlights or blow strategic explosives.
Yes, they are coming indeed,
A convoy of enforcement trucks. No sign of Steelheart yet.
I holstered my father's gun, then reached to the side to pick up the rifle. It felt too new to me. A rifle should be a well-used, well-loved thing. Familiar. Only then can you know that it's trustworthy. You know how it shoots, when it might jam, how accurate the sights are. Guns, like shoes, are worst when they're brand new. Still, I couldn't rely on the pistol. I had trouble hitting anything smaller than a freight train with one of those. I'd need to get close to Steelheart if I wanted to try it. It had been decided that we'd let Abraham and Cody test out the other theories first before risking sending me in close.
They're pulling up to the stadium,
Abraham said in my ear.
I've lost them.
I can see them, Abraham, Tia said. Camera 6.
Though she was outside of the city in the copter, with Edmund's gifted abilities to power it. She was monitoring a rig of cameras we'd set up for spying and for recording the battle.
Got it,
Abraham said.
Yes, they're fanning out. I thought they'd come straight in, but they're not.
Good, Cody said. That'll make it easier to get a crossfire going.
If Steelheart even comes, I thought. That was both my fear and my hope. If he didn't come, it would mean he didn't believe that Limelight was a threat, which would make it far easier for the Reckoners to escape the city. The operation would be a bust, but not for any lack of trying. I almost wanted that to be the case. If Steelheart came and killed us all, the Reckoners' blood would be on my hands for leading them on this path. Once that wouldn't have bothered me, but now it itched at my insides. I peered toward the football field, but couldn't see anything. I glanced back behind me toward the upper stands. I caught a hint of motion in the darkness, what looked like a flash of gold. Guys, I whispered, I think I just saw someone up here.
Impossible, Tia said. I've been watching all the entrances.
I'm telling you, I saw something.
Camera 14, 15. David, there's nobody up there.
Stay calm, son,
Prof said. He was hiding in the tunnel we'd made beneath the field and would come out only when Steelheart appeared. It had been decided that we wouldn't try blowing the explosives down there until after we'd tried all the other ways to kill Steelheart. Prof wore the tensors. I could tell he hoped he wouldn't have to use them. We waited. Tia and Abraham gave a quiet running explanation of enforcement's movements. The ground troops surrounded the stadium, secured all the exits they knew about, then slowly started to infiltrate. They set up gunnery positions at several points in the stands, but they didn't find any of us. The stadium was too large, and we were hidden too well. You could build a lot of interesting hiding places when you could tunnel through what everyone else assumed was untunnel-throughable.
Tap me into the speakers,
Prof said softly.
Done,
Abraham replied.
I am not here to fight worms,
Prof bellowed, his voice echoing through the stadium, blasted from speakers we'd set up.
This is the bravery of the mighty Steelheart, to send little men with pop guns to annoy me. Where are you, Emperor of New Cargo? Do you fear me so?
The stadium fell silent.
You see that pattern the soldiers set up in the stands?
Abraham asked over our line.
They're being very deliberate. It's intended to ensure they don't hit one another with friendly fire. We're going to have trouble catching Steelheart in a crossfire.
I kept glancing over my shoulder. I saw no other movement in the seats behind me.
Ah,
Abraham said softly.
It worked. He's coming. I can see him in the sky.
Tia whistled softly.
This is it, kids. Time for the real party.
I waited, raising my rifle and using the scope to scan the sky. I eventually spotted a point of light in the darkness, getting closer. Gradually, it resolved into three figures flying down toward the center of the stadium. Nightwielder floated amorphously. Firefight landed beside him. a burning humanoid form that was so bright he left afterimages in my eyes. Steelheart landed between them. My breath caught in my throat, and I fell utterly still. He'd changed little in the decades since he destroyed the bank. He had that same arrogant expression, that same perfectly styled hair, that inhumanly toned and muscled body shrouded in a black and silver cape. His fists glowed a soft yellow, wisps of smoke rising from them, and there was a hint of silver in his hair. Epics aged far more slowly than regular people, but they did age. Wind swirled about Steelheart, blowing up dust that had collected on the silvery ground. I found I couldn't look away. My father's murderer. He was here, finally. He didn't seem to notice the junk from the bank vault. We'd strewn it around the center of the field and mixed it with garbage we'd brought in to mask what we'd done. The items were easily as close to him now as they had been when he'd been in the bank. My finger twitched on the trigger of my rifle. I hadn't even realized it had moved to the trigger. I carefully removed it. I would see Steelheart dead, but it didn't have to be by my hand. I needed to remain hidden. My duty was to hit him with the pistol, and he was too far away for that at the moment. If I shot now, and the shot failed, I'd be revealing myself.
Guess I get to start this party, Cody said softly.
He was going to fire first to test the theory about the vault contents, as his position was the easiest to retreat from.
Affirmative,
Prof said.
Take the shot, Cody. All right, you slants,
Cody said softly to Steelheart.
Let's see if that junk was worth the trouble of hauling up here.
A shot rang in the air. 36. I was zoomed in on Steelheart's face in the rifle scope. I could swear that I saw, quite distinctly, the bullet hit the side of his head, disturbing his hair. Cody was right on target, but the bullet didn't even break the skin. Steelheart didn't flinch. Enforcement reacted immediately, men shouting, trying to determine the source of the shot. I ignored them, staying focused on Steelheart. He was all that mattered. More shots fired. Cody was making certain he had hit his mark.
Sparks, Cody said. I didn't catch sight of any of the shots. One of those has to have landed, though. Can anyone confirm?
Prof asked urgently. Hit confirmed, I said, eyes still to my scope. It didn't work. I heard muttered cursing from Tia.
Cody, move,
Abraham said.
They've caught your location.
Phase two,
Prof said. Voice firm, anxious but in control. Steelheart turned about with a leisurely air, hands glowing, and regarded the stadium. He was a king inspecting his domain. Phase two was for Abraham to blow some distractions and try to get a crossfire going. My role was to sneak forward with the pistol and get in position. We wanted to keep Abraham's position secret as long as possible so he could use explosions to try to move the enforcement officers around.
Abraham,
Prof said.
Get those
Nightwielders moving, Tia interrupted. Firefight too. I forced myself to pull back from my scope. Firefight had become a streak of burning light heading toward one of the entrances to the concourse beneath the stands. Nightwielder was moving up into the air. He was flying right toward where I was hiding. Impossible, I thought. He can't. Enforcement started firing from the positions they had set up. But they weren't shooting toward Cody. They were shooting toward other areas in the stands. I was confused for a moment until the first hidden UV floodlight exploded.
They're on to us, I cried, pulling back. They're shooting out the floodlights.
Sparks,
Tia said, as each of the other floodlights exploded in a row, shot out by various members of enforcement.
There's no way they spotted all of those.
Something's wrong here,
Abraham said.
I'm blowing the first distraction.
The stadium shook as I slung my rifle over my shoulder and climbed out of my hole. I raced up a flight of steps in the stands. The gunfire below sounded soft compared to what I'd experienced a few days ago in the corridors.
"Nightwielder is on to you, David," Tia said. "He knew where you were hiding. They must have been watching this place."
"That doesn't make sense," Prof said. "They'd have stopped us earlier, wouldn't they?" "What's Steelheart doing?"
Cody asked, breathing hard as he ran. I was barely listening. I dashed for the escape hole in the ground up ahead, not looking over my shoulder. The shadows from the seats around me began to lengthen. Tendrils grew like elongating fingers. In the middle of that, something splashed sparks along the steps in front of me.
"Enforcement sharpshooters," Tia said. "Targeting you, David."
"Got him,"
Abraham said. I couldn't pick Abraham's sniper shot out of the gunfire, but no further shots came after me. Abraham might have just revealed himself, though.
Sparks, I thought. This was all going to calamity really quickly.
I hit the rope and fumbled with my flashlight. Those shadows were alive, and they were getting close. I got the flashlight on, shining it to destroy the shadows around the hole, then grabbed the rope with one hand and slid down. Fortunately, the UV light affected Nightwielder's shadows as well as it did him personally.
"He's still after you," Tia said. "He..."
"What?" I asked urgently, holding the rope with the tensor glove, feet wrapped around it to slow my fall. I passed through open air beneath the third deck of seats, above the second deck. My hand grew hot with the friction, but Prof claimed the tensor could handle that without ripping. I dropped through the hole in the second deck and through the ceiling of the restroom, emerging into the complete darkness of the concourse. This was where things like the concession stands were. At one time, the outside of the place had all been glass, but that was now steel, of course, and so the stadium felt enclosed, like a warehouse. I could still hear gunshots, faint, echoing slightly in the hollow confines of the stadium. My flashlight shone mostly UV light through its filter, but it did glow a faint, quiet blue.
"Nightwielder sank into the stands," Tia whispered to me. "I lost track of him. I think he did it to hide from cameras."
So we're not the only ones with that trick, I thought, heart thumping in my chest. He'd come for me. He had a vendetta. He knew I'd been the one to figure out his weakness. I shined the flashlight about anxiously. Nightwielder would be on me in a second, but he would know that I was armed with UV light. Hopefully that would keep him wary. I holstered my father's pistol, wielding the flashlight in one hand and the gun in the other, my new rifle slung over my shoulder. I have to keep moving, I thought. If I can stay ahead of him, I can lose him. We had tunnels in and out of places like the restrooms, the offices, the locker rooms, and the concession stands. The UV flashlight gave off very little visible illumination, but I was an understreeter. It was enough. It did have the odd effect of making things that were white glow with a phantom light, and I worried that would give me away. Should I turn off the flashlight and go by touch? No, it was also my only weapon against Nightwielder. I wasn't about to go around blind when facing an epic who could strangle me with shadows. I crept down the tomb-like hallway. I froze. What had that been in the shadows ahead? I turned my flashlight back toward it. The light shone across discarded bits of trash that had fused to the ground in the Great Transversion, some formerly retractable stanchions for line control, a few posters frozen on the wall, some more recent trash, glowing white and ghostly. What had I... My light fell on a woman standing quietly in front of me. Beautiful hair I knew would be golden if I were seeing it under normal light. A face that seemed too perfect, tinged blue in the UV beam as if sculpted from ice by a master artist. Curves and full lips, large eyes. Eyes I knew. Megan. 37. Before I had a chance to do more than gape, the shadows around me started to writhe. I dodged to the side as several of them speared through the air where I'd been standing. though it seemed as if Nightwielder could animate shadows. Really, he exuded a black mist that pooled in darkness. That was what he could manipulate.